Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running for Friday on the Front Porch on this, the 28th day of July, 2017. This program is, of course, because it almost always is, live. We're going to try to, snap a streak this evening. If you know what I mean, we're going to try to snap a streak. And by that, I mean we're hoping to have the first show in 2 days that is not interrupted by a Frontier internet crash. Can we do it? I frankly do not know. But we will we'll see. One can certainly hope, because that's deeply frustrating, because quite often when the internet crashes, for some reason or another, we don't reconnect to White Rose Society, and we wind up losing a whole bunch of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Cross your fingers. But it occurred to me, oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It occurred to me that I should probably, we should probably have some sort of standardization in case that sort of thing happens. So this is my best attempt. If I'm sort of talking along and the program seems as near to normal as it can ever possibly be, which, you know, isn't very normal, of course, being a setting on a dryer, and suddenly I'm not there anymore, you may rest assured that it's probably not because I have been translated into another universe, or vectored into another time space, or you know, that the Tralfamadorians have not come to get me, or the Time Police, or you know, a Mugwump or a Star Lord or whatever. The best guess in the instance of this program disappearing is that Frontier Communications have crashed again. And like I said, I was reminded that we needed to talk about this by virtue of the fact that it crashed two nights in a row, because, after all, they suck. I cannot tell you how badly they suck. But it's what we've got. And nothing else sucks less. It just, other things just suck with more bandwidth, but not necessarily more reliability. So if I disappear, then you know that Frontier has probably crashed. And that being the case, all I can do is tell you to please be patient and periodically refresh your player or whatever. And if I can get back, I will be back. For my part, I promise to put out a note on Facebook and or Twitter. Facebook and Twitter, telling you that, in fact, the internet is down. And then when it comes back and we get back to broadcasting, I will then uh, put a notice up on Facebook and Twitter saying that I'm back. Okay? So, I mean, that's just the best I've got. But after two nights in a row and some... And look, it has an impact on things like fundraising. A jug of punch. Did Bob mean that they suck with less reliability? That really moves over into the deeply philosophical realm, because the reliability of suckitude is something that philosophers are still struggling with. There's a theory out there. There's the thought experiment of Schrodinger's suckitude, and then there's Heisenberg's suckitude principle. But that's right. So, you know, if you let me know, if you send me an email saying, Bob, where'd you go? I'll try to respond to that, too. And more than anything else, I would like to not have to ever deal with that issue. But given the nature of the internet service providers in my area, it is almost a lead pipe cinch that we will. So there. 7 minutes past the hour. I invite you. It's Friday on the front porch, okay? And I will be trying to run Friday on the front porch. It's a little tough on bandwidth, but that's kind of how we'll have to do it. Let me see here. So if you will please be so kind when we fire up the front porch, if you would like to be a part of the front porch, if you haven't been a part of the front porch in a long time and you say, hey, well, you know, let's do that again. Well, I can't run it exactly like Sparky did, because insofar as, I've counted them before, in addition to the 7 screens that I monitor here and the mixer, and the phones, and the socket, we've got a separate app just to monitor the suckitudinity of the internet connection. With all the things that I do monitor, it becomes I can't also sit here and just pull people into Friday on the front porch. So if you want to be part of Friday on the front porch, you need to reach out to me, and I will add you to the group if that is possible. I found out, for instance, last week that for some reason I am physically not able to add our buddy the Angry Indian to the Friday group. I don't know if it's because he's using that Linux version of Skype or what, but I can't do it. So... When the top of the hour comes around and we fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, if you never have before, in advance of that, you might want to send me a contact request on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn, and that will, and I'll prove it. And then you can reach out and contact me. I'll bring you into whatever group we have, and we will go from there. Okay. So that's the plan. If you need, let me see here. I think our buddy Jim is already on the stress line, waiting for Friday on the front porch. So that takes care of all that, because those are the only two ways to get to onto the front porch, via the stress line. One of these days, we'll raise another $400 and get another phone gizmo box, and I'll bring another phone number on, and that'll be two lines that we can add to that we can have for people who can't use Skype. All right, so that's all of that. This is, of course, if you'd like to, run on by. Folks are slowly wandering in, this being the end of the month and this being a Friday and everything. Yeah, folks have stuff they're doing. But wander on by. Click on chat room at headonradionetwork.com and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and Jug of Punch and VT Blom will be waiting for you, as is Midweek Utility Pinch Hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, and more as the evening proceeds. Okay? You know, everybody but Brain. By the way, Brain, we know who you are. Okay, now the last part. The worst part, really. Back on Monday, I announced, courtesy of our buddy Scott in Sweden, I announced the what has come to be known as the Send Bob to the Chirping Birds Basket Weaving Funny Farm for a Week Challenge. And in that, our buddy Scott offered to put up $1,250. In other words, I have a week on me to get Agnes and me the heck out of here for a week, because after 12 years of broadcasting, we've never had a vacation. 12 plus years. And it occurred to Scott that it might be a good idea for us to do that. You know, at something right, like 6.5 months into the Trump regime. As Scott noted in his original message, all of us have kept old Bobber Rebob lunking along for almost a dozen years, and his devotion to duty to us, to be frank about it, has been little short of death-defying at times. He said, how does he do it? Why does he do it? It has something to do with needing to be on air for donations to come in. Out of earshot, out of mind, you might say. And that out of mind thing is what gets to me as Bobber Rebob sits in his studio, chained to the oar like a Greek galley slave, year in and year out, it weighs on my mind. He said, this year, as I enter retirement and have left the drudgery of the daily grind behind, the value of a little R&R has never felt more important. You may recall Scott and his beloved Brigitte put up a blog as they traveled via plug-in electric automobile all over Western Europe last year. It was a heck of a lot of fun to read. So, we've been trying to raise $1,250, and thanks in part to our friends like these at Frontier, we're pulling up way short at the end of the week. Big thanks to the overnight crowd. Big, big thanks indeed. The overnight crew, we would have had a $600 fundraising goal this evening and been looking squarely in the eyes at a really, really, really brutal Friday on the front porch human miracle. But thanks to the overnight crew, it's not nearly so bad. It's $480. So that makes it reachable. Maybe. You know, one at 480, two at 240, 240, 480, whatever it takes. No, one at 480, two at 240. Four at 120. Eight at 60. 16 at 30. 32 at 15. 64 at 750. 128 at $3.75. You get the idea. Then we get into those half pennies, and the next thing you know, we're worrying about Gulfstream 5s and hangers and Maybach and things like that. So we're not going to go any further. But that's where we are. We need to raise $480 this evening. If you want to help out, and before Frontier has a chance to crash, because it's still raining here, and one never knows when a leaf might fall off a tree and cause Frontier to go down. Well, if you want to help out, head on radionetwork.com, contribute, and that little box where you fill the little boxes where you fill in your information, it becomes very, very easy. And if you'd like to be, and the thing is, you'd like to be part of the group that we hope to someday grow to be 400 names, well, then just click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and you'll be part of the overnight crew, the growing group that we hope will someday be the Horn 100, and someday be perhaps the Fabulous 400. So that's where that is. Mailing address, well, it's The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And if you'll let me know, I'll let Boss Man Wayne know. Okay. So that lets us get into the meat of the program now with all the... Oh, one more program reminder. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, this program will only be 2 hours. We will go from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then from 9 to 11, I'll be substituting for Mike as he and Kathy and Molly get one last getaway before the new school year starts. So that's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. All right. Okie doke. So, I realized there was... Oh, I've got something here. I got a message from Arnold to share regarding the suckitudinity of bad rural, more or less, internet. Wait a minute. Sneezing? Really? It rained today. There shouldn't be any pollen up. Damn! I hope that doesn't become a trend. No, Arnold says, one time all of Rick's internet went down during a live show, and he does the show from a shed in his front yard, and every time all the computers go off at once, I assume some redneck is dragging him down the road. Arnold! Arnold, help! Help! Yeah, right. That's a funny image. You kind of have to know Rick to understand why that's so very funny. Hey, wonderful news! Steve from Georgia Stan mentioning in the chat room, White Rose is sounding great, both medium quality and high quality streams. Good to know. Thank you. We'll keep our fingers crossed, and I won't move my mouth in any particular directions, because you're a particular individual that might be offensive to the great frontier eye in the sky ISP gods. So who stayed up late last night? Yeah, this is just like Romper Room. If you've got your hand up, I can see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Steve from Georgia Stan stayed up late last night. Absolutely. Lizardo stayed up late last night. Yes. A lot of us stayed up late last night watching the great Republican clusterfuck healthcare debate. And I can tell you one thing for certain. If I never, ever, ever hear the voice of Mike Enzi again, it'll be too soon. My God, what a supercilious, pusillanimous little pissant. There was debate. This is a little complicated, you know, procedurally. As a last-ditch effort before considering Mitch McConnell's cobbled together 2 hours to read it, nothing resembling regular order amendment. Technically, it was an amendment. Well, there was a motion to commit, which would have sent McConnell's travesty back to committees for hearings and further consideration. And so once you, and the motion was agreed, the motion was made and properly seconded, so they had to have debate. So each side got an hour to debate it. The Democrats, as proponents of the motion, went first. And there was some pretty top-notch speechifying. I got to tell you, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who, although I am certain he is not sufficiently ideologically pure, does have some progressive leanings about him. But understand that he's nowhere near being ideologically pure enough to satisfy those great arbiters of ideological purity. I mean, he's not nearly as ideologically pure as, say, Jill Stein, who would probably wind up in fucking Peoria if she tried to take a plane or a train to Washington, D.C. But, you know, you can't be ideologically pure and, you know, competently intelligent at the same time, apparently. But, so, anyway, Sherrod Brown gave some remarks that resonated and made a lot of sense. So, too, did Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. Also, nowhere near ideologically pure enough. A lot of Democrats had a lot to say. But pretty soon, their hour was up. And, you know, the Republicans didn't give a damn. They didn't bring a bunch of Republicans down to argue against what the Democrats had said, because everything the Democrats, who are not, let's remember, anywhere near ideologically pure enough, what they said was true. Agnes was particularly impressed with Sherrod Brown's remarks, and we had a little chuckle because I reminded her of back when he first went to the Senate, and Rush Limbaugh got wind of it, and Rush Limbaugh, of course, had no idea who Sherrod Brown was, but there was that great moment when he said, "Ah, yes, my friends, Ohio has a new senator. Let me see. Sherrod Brown. I think that's how those people pronounce that name. Sherrod Brown." Because, you know, Rush was convinced that Sherrod Brown was Kenyon. Yeah. It's still funny. Those people. Call me back when you get the bone out of your nose. Heroes of Diversity and Tolerance in the United States of America. An ongoing series that will never include Rush Limbaugh. A lot of good points were made, and none of the Republicans stuck around to make any points because everything the Republicans said was true, or everything the Democrats said was true, and the Republicans were in the, well, what, they're just going to stand up and agree? Hey, look, we're trying to fuck a few tens of millions of American people, and goddamn, I mean, you don't like it, I mean, tough shit, right? Because we're going to ram this right down your little dumbass throats, America, and you don't have sense enough to throw us the hell out of office. And even if you try, we've pretty much got the game rigged. So good luck. So instead of a whole bunch of Republicans coming down and responding to the Democrats, we were treated to Senator Mike Enzi of Wyoming, who reminded me of nothing so much as that phrase that Hannah Arendt coined many years ago now, the banality of evil. Because he just stood there in his sort of flat, school marmish voice and lectured the Democrats. Now, I've heard you say a lot about procedure, but I haven't heard you say anything about the substance of the bill, so I'm just going to sit here and blather on for, and at one point when they said, you know, will the senator yield for a question? I will not. I will have my hour, even if it is an hour of silence. He sounded like one of those sexually conflicted schoolmasters from the 19th century that gets a particular thrill. That's right. Come over here, Timmy. Mm-hmm. You know you need this. Take your pants down. Now lean right over here across teacher's lap. Yep, just like that, Timmy. Timmy, I'm going to cane your naked bottom now. You may cry, you may scream, or you may be silent. I care not, but I will cane your little bottom. That's right. Just be still. Mm-hmm. You need this, and you know you need this, and I know you need this. Mm-hmm. Whack! Yes, you see, you're getting this, Timmy, because you're a dirty little boy. At one point in time, I put out a tweet. You know, will somebody please bring Senator Enzi his applesauce and his taxpayer-funded applesauce and Haldol so we can have some peace? And it went on and on and on. And I fully expected him at some point to say, you know, I remember when I was a little girl out on the prairie. It got so bad that eventually somebody sent a message from Mitch McConnell telling him to shut the fuck up and they'd just get on with the vote. And then the motion to commit, which sadly was not a motion to commit Mike Enzi to a very, very pleasant rest home, the motion to commit failed along strictly party lines. And then it came down to the moment of truth. The moment when we would find out whether or not tens of millions of American citizens would lose their health care. There's a language thing here. For shorthand, we say lose their health care, but what we're really talking about was lose their access to health insurance so that when they needed it, they could have health care. That's just a bigger mouthful of words. Please know, I know the difference between health insurance and actual health care. I think we all do. Pretty sharp bunch, the Horn Family Community Congregation. But the votes began to be tallied. I paid particular attention for my delegation. You know what? Joe Manchin rose during the motion to commit debate and actually spoke in favor of sending the bill back to committee and spoke against the idea of taking health care away from tens of millions of American citizens. I know you won't like it. Well, certain people won't like it when I say this, but that was a testament to the leadership of Chuck Schumer. When you can keep somebody like Joe Manchin, whose most fundamental instinct that runs bone deep into his being is to screw his own constituents and run over and cavort among the toxic daisies with his Republican counterparts, when you can keep him from doing that, you, by God, have done something. Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, who also likes to go over and cavort among the toxic daisies with her Republican counterparts, she stayed put, too. They did not do this of their own free will. They did this because of something called leadership. Yes, 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 I know. The tweets, I'm sure, are about to start flying about how insufficiently ideologically pure Chuck Schumer is and how he's one of those tools of the Jew bankers and how he's owned by Wall Street and blah, 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 you know, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion and all of that shit. But it remains, the fact remains, that he managed and orchestrated a solid wall of opposition to what the Republicans had in mind. And he managed to protect the health care access via health insurance of tens of millions of American citizens. And so we got to give him credit for that, even if he is ideologically impure. Hell, we got to give credit to Joe Manchin. You don't hear me say that on this program very often. But you got to give credit to Joe Manchin for using a couple of brazing rods and somehow stiffening both his spine and his knees and managing to stand there with the rest of the Democrats. Hammer them when they get something wrong, but have the integrity to say so when they get something right. And Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp did something right last night. But there are only 48 Democratic senators. Geezer Disgustus sent his second in command, his number two. Oh, and isn't he? Namely, Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek. To the Senate just in case he would be needed to break another tie like he did the other day. So he was there in the Senate. there were only 48 Democrats, had the Republicans voted as a block, there was no way this bill was going to pass. Early on, word began to leak out that my Republican senator, which means I don't have a senator, when it comes right down to it here in West Virginia, I've got about a third of a senator. I don't have two. I don't even have one. I got about a third of a senator. And that's that little bit of Joe Manchin that gets things right, you know, that is the blind hog that finds the acorn once in a while. The other senator, Shelley Moore Capito, well, she announced fairly early in the evening that she had made up her mind, but she would not announce it until such time as she had cast her vote. Well, it didn't take an abacus or a string of quipus to figure out what that meant. Hard-hearted, craven bitch that she is, she had decided to knuckle under to Mitch McConnell and do as she was goddamn well told. You know, or else maybe some congressman from Texas would come up and blow her away. Because, you know, he said that this week, a congressman from Texas did. I'd like to call him out and settle this Aaron Burr style. But there were two people of courage on the Republican side. Much will be made and has been made of the third, but there were two people of courage on the Republican side, and their names were Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. Lisa Murkowski, and let's be clear, both of those women will perhaps they already have gone back to the business of screwing America. But when it came down to something as essential as the ability to go to the doctor when you're sick, those two women, those two senators from largely rural states, stuck to their principles. Lisa Murkowski stuck to her principles even after Comrade Kumquat sent Ryan Zinke, his Secretary of the Interior, to sort of say to her, hey, Lise, yeah, nice little state you got here in Alaska. A lot of Department of Interior activity here. Yeah, nice little state you got here. Be a real shame if something happened to it. She didn't blink. She stood strong. And she made clear that she was going to vote alongside the Democrats to protect the health insurance of tens of millions of American citizens. That left the vote count at 50-50. And that is why Mike Pencilneck Geek was sort of wandering around the room trying to act like he had any business being in the Senate chambers. He ain't exactly a statesman. There was a lot of milling around, a lot of caucusing. And all eyes turned to one man. The man who signed off on the motion to proceed and by one vote made it possible for this moment of High Drama to come to pass. John McCain. The man who, on the motion to proceed, had shown that, yes, he had had the courage in his younger years. He had had the courage to bomb innocent, defenseless civilians in Vietnam. But that he came up short on the courage to stop Mitch McConnell in his tracks when he could. And so we went through this tortured process when it could have been stopped before it started. And so the vote came down to him. Before he ever voted, he had stood talking with Lisa Murkowski. And all attempts to carve him away, pull him away from Lisa Murkowski, like hyenas trying to pull a wounded gazelle away from the herd, failed. And when it came time for McCain to vote, he voted no. You know all this by now. But it makes for a damn good story. He voted no. Meaning that the Republican attempt, the Mitch McConnell attempt, the Paul Ryan attempt, the Donald J. fucking Trump attempt to snatch away health insurance from tens of millions of American people was, for the time being, stymied. After that, it was just a matter of mopping up. And chinless Mitch McConnell, almost at the point of tears, came to the podium, to the lectern, to once again hector the Senate and tell them that the Republicans had tried to help the American people by taking away their health care access, but that the Democrats had stopped it from happening. He didn't dare call out Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins and John McCain. No, it was all the Democrats' fault. Absolutely, it was the Democrats' fault. And said, we'll just have to move on now. And Americans won't get help. You know, to hear him tell it, there wasn't a single person in the United States who had ever received health insurance as a result of the Affordable Care Act. And yet we know for a fact that there are people who are alive right now, maybe even within the sound of my voice, who are here because of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which the Republicans so hatefully insist upon calling Obamacare, even though it could just as easily be called Heritage Foundation Care. Chuck Schumer followed by getting up and offering a laurel and hearty handshake and the warm hand clasp of friendship, calling upon Republicans to work together and saying, we're not celebrating tonight. There are sick people all around America, by God, who had a right to celebrate. And calling on the Republicans to work together to come up with to fix the problems. And fixing the problems creating a bigger problem does not constitute fixing it. You You know, you could kind of, you can kind of draw an analogy. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski were like the Soviet Union and Great Britain before the United States' entry into the war. They stood alone and bore the withering brunt of the Republican assault from their own party. And way into the process, John McCain came along and claimed and claimed the hero's portion. And I say, let him have it. Let him have the hero's portion. Sure, why not? Let him have the hero's portion. John McCain gets to be the United States and claim the victory. So then it became a matter of all the millionaire for-profit media types offering up analysis for why John McCain finally decided to do the right thing. That maybe it was fate, knowing the fact that he was going back to Arizona to face more cancer treatment for his, what is it, glioblastoma? That maybe that put him in a sort of metaphysical touch with other suffering Americans who would be condemned to a grim death without access to health insurance. Earlier in the evening, the Republican governor of Arizona had said that he opposed this bill and thereby provided John McCain with the coverage of comradeship from the head Republican in his state. So there was that. Ultimately, though, well, how best to put this? John McCain can, when he wishes to be a real asshole. You remember in 2008, during the presidential campaign, when he referred to then candidate Obama as that one, which everybody who heard it understood to be a sort of offhand shorthand for that word that has an E, an R, an N, two G's and an I, and isn't ginger. Yeah, he can be a dick. He's a Navy aviator. They're legendary for their propensity and capacity to be dicks. Best of the best of the best, sir. Best pilots in the United States military, bar none. Kind of got to be if you're going to make a career out of landing massive jet aircraft on something that looks like a postage stamp. First time it comes into view. So there was that. But I prefer to think. I want to think. And I think there's reason to think that this was the actual reason. That in the final analysis, John McCain realized he would be, one, doing the right thing, but two, it would be a chance for him to display his Klingon nature. Because as we all know, that old Klingon proverb, revenge is a dish that is best served cold. And I like to think that as he declared his no vote last night, he was thinking of this.
I supported him for president. I raised $1 million for him. It's a lot of money. I supported him. He lost. He let us down. But, you know, he lost. So I never liked him as much after that because I don't like losers. But Frank, let me get to it. He hit me. He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
Do you agree with that?
He's a war hero because he was captured. Love Mexico. Respect Mexico.
Those years in the Hanoi Hilton reduced to a snide and skeevy and slimy and scurrilous dismissal. Not a war hero. Got captured. And remembering that and knowing that revenge is a dish that is best served cold, John McCain took a big handful of solid crystalline ice from Ruripente and crammed it right into the face of the Tangerine Tiberius and the Chinless Turtle, but especially into the face of the Tangerine Tiberius. And that ice was very, very, very cold indeed. And that's how you can tell your grandkids. That's how, for at least the time being, millions of people's health care got saved. Because one man took to heart that ancient adage that when you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy will float by. That's the part that history records. What is unrecorded is what comes after it. And when it does, you can stand up, drop trowel, and piss all over that body. And John McCain pissed all over Donald Trump last night. And Trump, for the most part, has been so goddamn disgusted, so beside himself, he was too angry to twoop. And so instead, we got new drama today. what everyone knew was coming for quite some time. The defenestration of Rents Priebus. He knew he was on the way out when Spicy bugged out. Homeland Security Director John Kelly will now be presumably the chief of staff of the Trump regime. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is all tied in with the Scaramucci affair. I read a story earlier today saying that Italian-American cultural organizations are worried that Scaramucci will now cause a wild flurry of resorts to classic, not classic, but typical Italian stereotyping. Mm-hmm. What's the name of the organization is the Italian American One Voice Coalition, and Andre Domino, a member of the executive board of that organization, said, "Let's be clear, Anthony Scaramucci in no way represents the 25 million Italian Americans who are hardworking, law-abiding, and respectful. The concern for us is that as an Italian-American, Scaramucci's persona will generate skits and other comedy on broadcast TV and elsewhere in which mob themes will be used. We've seen this movie before. The fallback for lazy comedy writers is if he's Italian, he needs to be portrayed as mobbed up. The fact that the news media has begun calling him the Mooch, I believe, is a prelude to this. Well, you know, suck it up, Buttercup." If he's acting like a mobster, it's not necessarily a statement that he's acting like an Italian. After all, we've got mob problems in this White House, right? Yeah. That doesn't mean it's Italian problems.
No, no. Our mob problem does not sound like Italian whatsoever. Our mob problem sounds like someone who is mob from... Mother Russia, eh? Yeah. That is our mob problem. There are many, there are many kinds of mob.
On the other hand, if Anthony Scaramucci just happens to sound like he's one more line of coke away from hollering, "Say hello to my little friend!" Well, that's not an Italian problem either, because Tony Montana wasn't Italian. If he sounds like he comes from the road company of my cousin Vinny, that's not an Italian problem either. That's because he sounds like a certain kind of New Yorker. So, while I'm sensitive to things like this, the Italian-American One Voice Coalition doesn't need to be trying to passive-aggressively direct the skits that are being written, even as we speak, for the upcoming next season of Saturday Night Live, assuming the Mooch is still around by then. But it, in light of today's announcement, it becomes pretty clear that the Mooch,
Adrian,
no, wrong city. The Mooch was brought on board to provide cover for the tiny tyrant to get rid of Rents Priebus, when he had been saddled with Rents Priebus, you know, because Rents Priebus had been chair of the RNC. So now Rents Priebus is in the wilderness until he gets a job with MSNBC.
Remember, Michael Steele is a contributing opinionator to NBC News. So, I don't know. Maybe there will be a bidding war for Rents Priebus. Who knows? So much stuff to go into. I hope we'll talk about it on Friday on the front porch. It is exactly 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And I'm going to send up the Bob signal. If you want to participate in Friday on the front porch, call. Yeah, okay, call. I guess that's the word. It's damn sure not dial. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, on Skype. And you will be in the thick of things. And as you ring in, I will add you to the conversation. I can't do the magic that Sparky did. Because, you know, seven screens, mixer, the succotudinity meter of the of Frontier Internet, the stream itself, the recordings, all of that. But if you want to engage in the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, I welcome you so to do. And in the interim, we will take a brief break to bring the group together and hopefully get started on fundraising, because the program's been on for an hour and we haven't gotten started on that Friday on the Front Porch miracle. We've got $480 to go in fundraising for the evening. And hanging on this is Scott's vacation challenge. Hanging on this is... Well, never mind. But hanging on this is finishing July in such a way as to lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky. There's a lot hanging on this. $480 to be raised. A couple of emails. One, Randy in PA says, not sure we should be celebrating too soon. After all, Congress holds the purse strings, the House, Randy means, and could slip something into some other necessary bill. No, there are no champagne. Don't get me wrong. There are no champagne corks to be popped in all of this. This is the exhaustion that follows a siege. This is the well-deserved 8-10 hours of sleep that you get after you've been wide awake for days on end holding back the barbarians, and they back away from the walls for a few minutes. And you get to regroup and gather your strength. This is not a celebration. Hell, this Congress is just a little more than 6 months old. That means there's a little less than 18 months of carnage, chaos, devastation, anti-American misery that they can create. No celebrations, Randy. None. And Marty points out, by the way, ideologically pure, Bob, there are some, to use your term, sparkle fart pony brigade, who are saying Bernie Sanders isn't being ideologically pure enough. Look, no one can ever be ideologically pure enough to satisfy the people who are absolutely convinced that they're the ones who are ideologically pure. Devin's saying, that 8 hours of sleep is when they sneak in and slit your throat. Well, yeah, assuming that you're not so silly as to... This all presupposes that you're not so silly as to bring the... that great big wooden horse inside your city gates.
Ellen, you want to know, I'll share this with you before the break, too. You want to know how I know that Joe Manchin got it right last night and Shelley Moore Capito got it wrong? I mean, come on, Shelley Moore is Archmore's daughter, as I have told you over and over again, and most people aren't interested enough in the history of West Virginia to know who Archmore was, but simply take my word for it that he was the most evil, corrupt, vile, nasty, filthy, hateful, disgusting human being ever to engage in politics in the state of West Virginia and achieve the office of governor. You've heard me talk about the Buffalo Creek disaster. 1972, when an itty-bitty little tiny, just a few tens of millions of gallons, not the multi-billion gallon seas of toxic waste we have now, but just a little bitty baby one broke loose and ran down the Buffalo Creek Valley and wiped out everything in its path. Well, Arch Moore was governor of West Virginia at that time, and he did everything in his power to screw the living daylights out of the people who survived that coal industry created nightmare. He's one of the ones who said, well, it's the act of God, as if God built that goddamn dam and not a coal company. So it came as no surprise to me that Shelley Moore decided to put the wood to her own constituents. It's what Moores do. And I'll add a little caveat to that. She's not up for re-election until 2020. Oh, well, then we can just sit around and wait and hope that somebody comes along that the Democrats will run against her that might beat her. Bullshit! The time to find the candidate to run against Shelley Moore is yesterday. But there's a problem that attends finding that candidate. In order to be a Democrat who is going to beat Shelley Moore, and around whom the Democrats in West Virginia, who still outnumber the Republicans, can rally, you're going to need to find yourself a pro-coal, pro-guns, pro-God, pro-fetus, anti-choice, progressive. Who also favors universal single payer or Medicare for all or a public option or something like that. That's all. That's just got to find one of those. In other words, Joe Manchin, except the progressive part. Sounds a little like you're looking for a leprechaun riding a three-legged unicorn, doesn't it? Pro-coal, pro-God, pro-gun, pro-fetus, anti-choice, pro-single-payer, progressive Democrat. Good luck. And by the way, like I said, how do we know Joe Manchin got it right? Well, here's the official statement from the Communications Office of the West Virginia Communications Director of the Republican National Committee, who can be reached at 561-389-0934. His name is Brett Tubbs. And he said, please consider the following statement for your coverage on last night's vote to repeal Obamacare.
It's business as usual with Senator Manchin, who continued to show how out of touch he is with West Virginia by voting to keep disastrous Obamacare in place. In fact, he wants to make matters worse by not ruling out a single-payer health care system. With his vote, Manchin turned his back on West Virginians and once again proved he's willing to cost hardworking families even more in skyrocketing premiums and penalize those who are unable to afford health care.
Fuck you, Brett Tubbs, with a red-hot fucking poker, you piece of shit. I bet your mother didn't even like you. Joe Manchin actually protected people's health care last night. And people in West Virginia, you may rest assured, wanted their health care protected, just like people all across this country. And according to Brett Tubbs, the West Virginia Communications Director of the Republican National Committee, who could be reached at area code 561-389-0934. Well, having a single-payer system would
make matters worse.
Well, you know, at least he's true to form, Brett Tubbs. And by the way, for anybody who was thinking about kicking $5 or something over to the Justice Democrats or that campaign to primary Joe Manchin, just go out in the yard and set fire to it instead. Joe Manchin will be the Democratic nominee for Senate from the state of West Virginia. Just want to be clear about that. Because there's not a damn thing that a primary challenger to Joe Manchin could have done last night that Joe Manchin himself didn't do. Now, these are words coming from somebody who loathes Joe Manchin. Okay? But I also live in reality land. Okay? Something to ponder, courtesy of Robert in Australia. From Kennedy's Rice University speech to Armstrong's footprint on the moon was approximately 7 years and 3 months. 50 years later, and what has the USA become? Indeed, indeed, what have we become? Thank you, Robert. So that about covers everything. It's 13 past the hour. I've over-filibobstered a little bit. But we'll go to the break. Go ahead and dial into Skype so I can get this going and get this done, and we can get Friday on the Front Porch started. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is radio not brought to you by any Russian oligarchs or skeevy Russian websites or ads for Buy Gold Now. This is what radio that you can count on is not influenced by any advertiser's position or any political position taken by any billionaire, trillionaire, millionaire, oligarch, what have you. This is a radio network that exists because of you. This is The Horn.
Oh!
Yeah, that reference to different kinds of mobs that may be, you know, in New York. That's what reminded me of the mob rules, Black Sabbath, Ronnie James Dio fronting at that point in time. This is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch for the 28th day of July, 2017. Happy Friday, everybody. It is Friday on the Front Porch. If you want to be part of the conversation, remember, you got to call me. You understand that? You got to call me. Bob Kincaid Horn. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. That's enough of that, Bob. You gotta call in, because I can't just sit here and draw people in, because I don't have that. I don't know how it works, but this is our attempt at Friday on the Front Porch. So Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, or as is the case over on the over on the stress line, where Jim has been waiting for a very, very long time. Welcome to the group, Jim. Oh, Jim. Jim. Just a minute. Hey, Jim.
Hello?
Yeah, Jim. Jim. Okay, that being the case, let's. I wanted to give Jim pride of place because he's been waiting the longest, but we'll go over and check in with Billable Rick. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you, Bob?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Oh, doing well. Doing well. Yeah, it's been a crazy week, you know? News-wise,
It's been a stressful one, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has been. I mean, this whole, you know, Affordable Care Act repeal, we'll call it Obamacare repeal attempt. I mean, you know, it kind of surprised me that it wasn't closer, at least the first two votes. I mean, the third vote was obviously, you know, pretty much white knuckles, you know?
Yeah.
But it's clear that the Republicans have nothing to offer. They only stand against things. They don't stand in favor of anything except maybe in favor of tax cuts for the rich and, you know, letting corporations, you know, rape and pillage, you know, the small people, so to speak. But that's about it, I think, you know, and no regulation, you know.
Well, as it turns out, I do have a regulation for you.
Okay.
There's a new regulation out or a new plan out from the Food and Drug Administration.
Okay.
It was announced today. Over the course of a number of years, and it's probably a good idea, it's hard on a certain group of American citizens. But in the long run, it's going to have a net positive impact. Over the course of years, the FDA will move to enforce regulations that limit the amount of nicotine in cigarettes to what are referred to as non-addictive levels. I didn't know that there was a non-addictive amount of nicotine.
I've never heard that. Well, that sounds like a good idea to me. I mean,
it's great. Hopefully, it will keep kids from becoming addicted to nicotine, which is why people continue to smoke.
Right, of course.
I remember back in the Reagan administration when C. Everett Koop, America's creepiest looking ever Surgeon General. I remember when he declared that. That nicotine was orders of magnitude more addictive than heroin. I don't know if that still holds true scientifically, but that's what he said. So, in light of our heroin epidemic,
Yeah, maybe nicotine should be the next on the list. There's only one problem. It's going to be hard on the people who continue to smoke. Because people who continue to smoke are smoking because, well, some of them enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them are smoking because they remain addicted to nicotine. And just chomping on the gum or dissolving a lozenge doesn't have quite the same effect as sparking up.
Right.
Kind of the same way that somebody, say, in a 12-step program milling around a cocktail party with a glass of ice water with a lime wedge on the edge so everybody won't go, you know, him. Is not getting the same effect as the people who are getting, you know, tanked.
Right, right.
And so you remember people of a certain age will remember the old Jerry Lewis skit where he'd have a cigarette in each ear, one up each nostril, four in each hand and five across his mouth.
I think I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You could probably just go into a search engine and type in Jerry Lewis cigarettes bit and click images and see a picture of the young Jerry Lewis with, you know, five across the front, two up the nostrils, one in each ear and four in each hand.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I mean, I'm sure these cigarettes are going to be every bit as expensive as the ones we have now and every bit as taxed because remember, cigarette smokers carry a hell of a lot of tax burden on their backs. For instance, the SCHIP program, the expanded Children's Health Insurance Program, of which we all heartily support.
Right.
Well, unless you smoke, you don't really support it.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay. Hmm.
Because that's funded by tobacco users.
Okay. Wow. Wow. So let me ask you this, Bob. If this regulation does go into effect by the FDA, or this FDA regulation does go into effect, you'll have to smoke basically more cigarettes to feed your addiction, essentially, right?
Well, if it's non-addictive levels of nicotine, you're never going to feed it. So instead, you're just going to have a bunch of nicotine junkies walking around jonesing. Or, as I've done in the past when I tried to quit, you know, you just kind of slap the patch and rub it real good and hope maybe you're just jamming a little more nicotine into your system.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
But I mean, I bring that story up primarily only because you said there are no regulations going out. Yeah, there are.
Well, that's not a Republican idea, I don't think, though, Bob. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, they're actually maybe listening to their scientists for a change.
This is the Trump regime's FDA. It's part of the executive branch, just like the EPA. And
yeah, right? That's true.
So, I mean, I'm surprised they got away with it. But they probably got away with it because Trump probably hates smoking. You know who else hated smoking? Never mind. We'll just leave it at that.
We're not going to give Gerald his win tonight, are we?
Well, you know, I think we're going to have to reinstitute the pool here soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Devin points out it's simply a plot to double their sales. There we go.
Oh, there you go. That could be.
Really, is it going to be? Hey, so they'll be able to advertise non-addictive cigarettes, and then they'll be, come on, kids, have a smoke.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez. Well, it might be non-addictive, an individual cigarette, but if you keep going, if you smoke cigarette after cigarette after cigarette, you're going to get to an addictive level.
Well, screw the addiction. It's not the nicotine that makes you sick. It's
That's
the
true.
Tars.
That's
it's
true.
The particulates. That's true. It's the filth that goes inside and gums up and gunks up your lungs. It ain't the nicotine.
So that's actually going to be less healthy if people are smoking more cigarettes because they're going to be ingesting more tar, basically.
It sounds counterproductive to me. I mean, I remember years and years and years ago when one company tried to produce a cigarette alternative that was made out of cocoa bean husks, cacao bean husks.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, they tasted like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it, right.
So it's sort of like classic Coke, right?
Oh no, New Coke. New Coke.
New Coke. Yeah, the New Coke. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. New Coke really, yeah, really sucked.
They had to bring back the classic. Yeah. That goes way back. That's like 30 plus years ago now, Bob. You know,
The summer of 1985.
Yeah, I remember because I was still living in Iowa before I moved to California to go to law school. So I remember when that whole, you know, the new Coke came out and they brought the classic Coke back, and it's like, oh, geez. You know?
But now there's a new Coke controversy.
What's that?
You know what Coke Zero was? Unpaid product placement, by the way.
Right.
The fundraising goal remains at $480. They had Coke Zero, but now they've changed it and rebranded it to Coke Zero Sugar.
What?
Yeah, because the people weren't understanding that it didn't have sugar in it, I guess.
Coke Zero Sugar. I see what you're saying. Okay.
It's still going to be a zero calorie, you know, carbonated beverage. But they're emphasizing zero sugar because sugar is the new gluten.
Right. I mean, if something has zero calories, it necessarily doesn't have any sugar for the most part, you know?
It can't have much of anything.
Yeah, right. Exactly. People are so dumb, Bob.
Steve pointing out, no, regarding non-nicotine cigarettes. It's part of the communist plot to sap and impurify our precious bodily fluids.
Oh, my God. Well, you're probably right. You know, or Steve is probably right about that, you know? I mean, yeah, it's definitely a plot. Just like along with the, you know, fluoridation of our water, you know? Look at what we've become. We now have a comrade as our president, Bob, you know? They've won. Reagan won the Cold War. Trump surrendered to the Russians, basically, you know?
Yeah, a different bunch of Russians. I mean, granted, and you can't reiterate this enough, because one of the arguments of the Pooty Poot fan club is that it's a new McCarthyism, dude. It's just red baiting all over again. when in point of fact, there aren't any reds. Okay, there's no commies. This isn't about commie fear. This is about an authoritarian, homicidal, murderous, maniac dictator who orders journalists killed and gay people stomped to death.
Right.
And along the way, it tries to shore up his flagging prestige by attacking other people's democratic institutions because, you know, he despises the idea of democracy.
Exactly.
Not that we're very good at it.
No, we aren't. But our president is totally in line with you know, Putin's, you know, his operating style, let's just say, you know. And he would, you know, if Trump could kill journalists, he probably would, you know. I have
well,
no doubt.
The mooch certainly made it clear that he'd like to.
Oh, my God. And he actually wants to be called the mooch. That guy's like a caricature. He's like a caricature of a human being, Bob.
Yeah, the
like a cartoon.
The Italian-American society can't complain if he is portrayed like he is.
Right. He talks just like that. You know, he's got this tough guy image that he tries to portray, kind of like, you know, kind of like in Goodfellas, you know.
Right. Right. Only those were, you know, tough people.
Right.
Whereas the mooch would cry like a child if somebody looked at him the wrong way. I mean, he went into a frenzy over somebody saying that there was a dinner taking place at the White House. And then he calls the, I mean, Jesus Christ, He calls the New Yorker, a reporter at the New Yorker,
yeah,
and says, well, if you don't tell me who it was that leaked to you, I'll fire the entire staff.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, they had complaints to him.
Oh, well, here, let me give up my sources and give up all my journalistic ethics, if you're going to put it that way.
Yeah, right. He actually thought that the reporter would do that. The reporter assured him, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, it's like, this is just such a strange administration. These guys, they don't know the least thing about governing. I mean, I know Republicans have always been bad at governing. They're good at campaigning because they're good at dividing people, you know? But they're lousy once they get power at anything other than, let's say, naming, you know, right-wing reactionary Supreme Court justices, you know? Aside from that, they don't know what to do, Bob, you know? Suicides increase when Republicans take power. The economy doesn't do as well, you know? Unemployment goes up. I mean, eventually it will go up, you know? They know how to destroy things, you know? They know how to throw poo at the walls. But I don't know what else they know how to do, you know?
They're vandals. They're Visigoths. They're barbarians. They're economic barbarians.
No, they are. They are. Yeah. Well, I'm finally watching Game of Thrones, actually, with Lori, my girlfriend. And, you know, we're enjoying it, you know? And there's so many similarities between what goes on in that show and what I see in this administration. It's just scary, you know? Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing. So, anyway, so let me let someone else get in here. I know we got a couple other people. I know Charlie called into...
yeah, Charlie's there and Steve's there. Let's see. Let's go in order. Steve, what's up?
Bob, what's going on, man?
You know, just sitting here doing a radio show.
I'm trying to recruit people to call in, but I'm not having much luck. Not that much success. That's all right, though. We got this. Hell, me and you could talk for 3 hours on the phone. This is nothing, right?
Well, I mean, I can talk for 3 hours by myself.
By yourself, right. Yeah, sure. But
go ahead.
That healthcare thing, no need to pop the champagne corks. You know, I felt like we dodged a bullet, but to me that was just a shot across the bow. And if that doesn't get people to motivate in the 2018 election, I don't know what the fuck will.
Well, then you may not know what the fuck will, because this is going to have to be a sustained campaign if it's to be anything at all.
And this could rear its ugly head again. It's like Glenn Close in the bathtub. We need an Ann Archer to come and for the GI men out there, I don't mean this physically, I mean it metaphorically, but to slay this beast, you know?
Well, but we already got to go back to zero with all this and just, you know, sort of re-message. Taking back the Senate in 2018 is a really steep uphill climb. Now, Dean Heller made it easier last night by voting with McConnell. Oh, wait a minute. Let me do something real quick. Just a second.
Sure.
I'm learning how to do this on the fly, on the job training. Adding John from Central PA.
Oh, welcome, John. It's awesome.
Well, I hope we connect. But
I see him. Yeah,
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, John. Stand by a minute, okay? Glad to have you.
No, you can talk to John, Bob.
Well, I'm in the middle of an idea.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
And the point being that Dean Heller made it easier to come after him last night. I guess Jeff Flake is up in Arizona, and he proved himself to be a lick spittle. That's Arizona and Nevada, but those are both still steep uphill climbs. And two won't get the job done, Steve.
I know. And God forbid something happens to Pappy. I'm not wishing that on him. But you know there's going to be another right-wing tool ready to jump into his shoes. In fact, there's already some woman, I don't know if you've seen her on the news.
Yeah, hollering for him to resign.
Yeah, or wanting the governor to say that he's incompetent to replace him. Which I thought, man, how swarmy is that, you know?
Is this McCain?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, he's not going to last for more than 6 months with the type of cancer he's got, most likely. I don't know. You never know if he gets good care, you know?
He's a tough old bird. I mean, who knows? But I'm certainly no McCain fan from a political standpoint, but I don't know why he did what he did, if he wanted to return things to regular order, or if he was just grandstanding. What do you think, Bob?
He was image burnishing. This was at least where John McCain, at least as I see it, this was dragging us through days of miserable anguish so that he could be the hero. I mean, it really, my little World War II analogy really does work. And by the way, the stress line is open for anybody who wants it, by the way, 304-663-4676. My little World War II analogy really does work because, you know, Lisa Murkowski is Russia, and she holds out against a full-on assault with no support from anybody else around her. And Susan Collins from Maine really is Great Britain, and she gets her share of the blunt force. And they've taken that for weeks because they've been straight up about the whole process the whole time. If there's any heroes here, it's those two. You know, Shelley Moore Cameltoe.
Oh yeah.
She reverted to form. So there's, you know. But John McCain gets to play the United States and come in after Murkowski and Collins have been taking a beating for a much longer period of time, and he walks away the hero, and he played it out that way.
But and he could have shut this down what last Tuesday if he'd have wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been a non-issue instead of all of us having heartburn for days, not being able to sleep. I think you were one of them, Bob. I know I was, because I've got so many loved ones that are dependent on Obamacare.
Dude, I am part of the great American uninsured, okay?
Yeah, I understand, right? And open season is right around the corner, so...
You know, if
now, how many? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, John.
I just want to say real quick, how many House Democrat or House Republicans were celebrating last night? You get what I'm saying?
Well, the Freedom Caucus wasn't. Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Steve Cantaloupe's King and Marsha Blackburn and Diane Black and that gang of fucking weirdos. Mo Brooks, Les Brains from Alabama. they were all America just died tonight. And then that son of a bitch, that bastard John Cornyn, who gave a speech, who gave a little 5-minute speech right before the vote on the motion to commit. You know, the speech that he gave about we're here to do our duty. That would have been perfectly in place the moments before the matches were set to the fuses of the cannons that were pointed at Fort Sumter. I've been saying this for years now. They are an insurrection against the idea of the Constitution of the United States of America. Sorry, I ranted. Oops.
That's okay. Oh, rant on.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
that's okay, brother. It's good to hear from you. But didn't we all take a modicum of pleasure seeing Trump not get his way? I know I sure the fuck did. But he came out today and said, I knew it. I knew it all along. The only way we're going to get rid of Obamacare is to let it fold on its own. See, he's never intellectually honest. Never.
No, I badly want it gives me pleasure to think of him ranting away down in his little bunker.
In the White House, just throwing shit all over the place, you know, having temper tantrums and yelling at the TV and
you know, you got your melanoma's down there now, and you, Donald, come over here. Here, I have your fidget spinner. You can fidget spin with Baron. Here, sit down, Donald. Shut up, Melania. I'm not real happy right now. They've turned on me. There's no one loyal. I can't trust anybody. Help!
Well, he was tweeting at 2:18 this morning. So he's got to be insane. There's something wrong with this guy. And I don't know if we're going to be able to impeach him or not. Maybe on legal grounds. And
not, yet,
bring...
not yet. Not yet. Not. Come on. Are we going to do this again, Steve? I love you, but we're not going to do this again, are we?
I know. Well, it depends on what
the
they
Republicans
can find.
Are never, ever, 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 ever. Even taking into account that infinite monkeys, infinite typewriters, one of them's going to write Hamlet. There's not an infinite Republican Congress out there in the entire physical conceptualization of the known fucking universes who are going to impeach Donald goddamn Trump, okay?
But thanks to Ken Starr, can a sitting president be indicted? Philip Rick, help me out, brother.
It's an open constitutional question.
Yeah, I think it is an open question. I think the last time it was considered by the lawyers and DOJ or whatever during the Clinton administration, I think the decision was no, a sitting president can't be indicted, but they could be charged once they're out of office. So they can be impeached, removed, and then they could be charged with a crime. But no, I think it's an open question. I think the answer generally is probably not. A more open question is whether a president can pardon himself for crimes that he's committed.
That's craziness.
I don't think a president can, but you know, who knows? Who knows?
But if he was to get rid of the special prosecutor, Lindsey Graham came out and said that'll be the beginning of the end if he tries to pull any nonsense like that.
Well, yeah, but Lindsey Graham says that shit all the time.
He's all talk.
Yeah, look where he was at yesterday.
He couldn't even follow his boyfriend and vote like McCain.
Vote no, right? Yeah.
Well, it's because John wouldn't hold his hand yesterday during the vote, Bob. You know that.
I mean, what a chicken shit Lindsey Graham is. He comes because they quoted him during the motion to commit debate. He said it was a fraud, this bill.
Yeah.
And then he said, but I'm going to vote for it. Yes. As long as I can get some promises from the House of Representatives that we won't actually send it to the president, I'll vote for it.
Since when do you vote for a bill that you don't want to be passed? Or let's say enacted into law, Bob.
John, I feel one of my sick headaches coming on. Don't talk to me about sick headaches, my friend.
Oh, oh my God.
Good one, Bob. Good one. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Somebody bring me a julep. I'll be under the fainting couch.
But before you bring John in, I just wanted to bring up one more topic. These sanctions against the Russian, I think Trump's got himself boxed in here, don't you, Bob?
It remains to be seen.
I mean, if he vetoes it, the Senate has enough votes to override the veto, so he's in a no-win situation.
If McConnell and Ryan allow it to come to the floor.
Why wouldn't they? That's going to make them look like Russian lovers, or, you know, if they don't. It's going to make them look foolish.
Well, but they're in a bind, too. Then they would be seen as disloyal to Trump, okay? And please, for Christ's sakes, I guess we got to do this again, too. The Trumpenzees have lots and lots and lots and lots of goddamn guns.
I think more of people on our side of the political discussion need guns too, because you know I'm a very okay. Can you guys hear me?
Or yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, no, go ahead, John. You got the floor, okay. Brother. I'm out.
I just thought I heard an echo or something.
No, but, glad you're here, man.
I think that was me.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Go, John.
Okay. Sorry, but see, I'm as left-wing as you can go, man. I'm very progressive, but I'm not gonna lie. Like I grew up here in South Central Pennsylvania, very rural area, and I happen to have a lot of guns, and I happen to, you know, right.
Hey, time out, John. Time out, John. Steve, until you talk, could you be so kind, please, as to mute?
Yeah, I gotta figure out how to do this. I don't recognize the interface on the Skype here.
Oh dear.
Why do they keep changing this?
And mine's not working. I have a mute on my mic that I have to use.
Yeah, you could always mute the. I mean, are you on your phone?
Yeah.
Yeah, just mute the mic on your phone.
I don't know how to do that.
I think you hit the two little buttons down at the bottom of the Skype screen, and it comes up, and you'll see a row of icons across the bottom. One
yeah,
of them
but I don't...
the microphone, and you hit that, and it mutes it.
Hello?
Yeah, you're still there.
I hear you.
So the one that looks like a microphone I hit, and that's going to mute me. Okay.
Yeah, we'll know because then the New York City background noise won't be there. Which is, after all, kind of cool. It's kind of like when we got Tracy and we can hear her cussing at other drivers.
Did it work? Because I just clicked what I thought was mute. Did it work?
I just heard a truck go by.
Well, I had to unmute to say if it asked if it worked. So here I'm muting now.
Okay.
I don't hear anything on my end.
Okay, I think we're good. So that being the case, let's go back to John.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I live in a pretty rural area and I grew up here. So I happen to have, you know, some guns too because, like, I used to hunt and everything. And I think that, you know, at what point do we need to protect ourselves too? Because these people might come after us eventually. I mean, like, I think they're capable of doing it, these right-wingers. And, you know, I've heard a lot of rhetoric about, you know, what
Yeah, but
what
John,
they would do.
If they decide to, you gunning up is not going to protect you.
Oh, I know. But it's just,
unless you're just going to transform your house into a late 18th century fort and have gun slits and Ma back there, loading the muzzle loader. But I understand why you would think about something like that. I mean, the overarching, you know, when I was talking about finding somebody to beat Shelley Moore in a Senate race in West Virginia, and I said we need a pro-coal, pro-gun, pro-fetus, anti-choice, pro-God, anti-gay, progressive.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is a leprechaun riding a three-legged unicorn.
Maybe the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade could suggest somebody to oppose Capito, Bob.
Well, they anybody suggested by the by the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade is a loser out of the gate because they're going to be pro choice, they're going to be anti gun, they're going to be anti coal, they're going to be might even be an atheist or God forbid a Jew or holy hell a Muslim, and you know lose, okay. And this is a problem that repeats itself throughout the Confederacy. Now, West Virginia wasn't part of the Confederacy, but this is the problem that the Democrats face, and they haven't figured out how to deal with it. And it's a booger of a problem. Okay, and, yeah, and you know, the one place you could start maybe is guns. Because, for instance, in largely rural states that have a lot of hunting, the people who are good hunters understand that there is a big damn difference between having a 270 for deer season and, you know, a good 12 gauge for turkey season, maybe a 22 for squirrel season, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a real dead eye if you can go squirrel hunting with a 22, but never mind. There's a difference between that and having, you know, 50 different handguns. Because, see, when you buy a handgun, and I think even the most strident supporters of gun, of you know, kind of have to admit this. If let me set this up. If you buy that 270, that 30-06, and then you and you know you set it up real nice with a good case, and you get yourself a really kick-ass optics for the scope. You know, unless you're James Earl Ray, or, oh God, this will get us down into it too. Unless you're James Earl Ray or Lee Harvey Oswald, you're not thinking about killing somebody with that gun. You're looking at it and you're gauging it on its relative merits for the purpose of hunting deer. And so,
oh yeah.
And so when you, okay, you're a hunter, John, you know this. So you look at it and you go, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, boy, I tell you what, maybe this is the year that I get that 16-point atypical Boone and Crockett rack. Okay? And people who don't hunt don't even know what I just said.
It's a big buck, is
right.
All I get.
But
is what that means.
But when you go to purchase that Sig Sauer 45 caliber 6+1 capacity handgun, or the Glock 9mm with an 18+1 capacity, you're not thinking about Bambi. You're not thinking about squirrels or turkeys. You're thinking about what happens when you have to pull that thing out and draw it down and end the life of another human being.
I don't think I could even do it.
There really is a big difference between purchasing a hunting weapon and purchasing a handgun. And maybe that's where the conversation starts. I mean, Jesus.
Well, it's...
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to... Sorry, but not to cut you off right now. But I was just going to say, like, a lot of people think it's for self-defense. And even if I had to use one in self-defense, I still don't think I could shoot somebody. You know what I mean?
Well, but I'm not calling bullshit on you, John. But that's the biggest load of bullshit that's come down the pike about guns. That I'm getting me a shooting gun pistol for self defense.
They all say that around.
Bullshit, okay? If somebody is threatening your life, the chances that you're going to be able to use your blue steel freedom protector to defend yourself approaches effective zero. Because once somebody's got the drop on you, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Like, it's reality.
Most people, and most criminals are very, they haven't, it's, if they're attacking you, it's probably not the first time they attack somebody before.
Well, right,
you know,
and they're not going to walk up to you and say, draw.
Right. That's yep.
Wah, wah, wah.
I'm gonna count to three here. On the count of three, I'm gonna shoot you. You know, no, it doesn't work that way. Only in Westerns, right?
Right. So maybe that's a place where the conversation can begin in places like Confederate and Western states. Can we? Or may or, I don't know. Maybe a successful challenger to some somebody like Shelley Moore Capito has to say, fuck guns. Everybody have as many guns as you want to. I don't give a good goddamn about your guns. And then when they, you're in a pickle when they start talking about, yeah, well, that's fine that you're a Second Amendment supporter. God bless you. But what about the precious little fetuses? And your only hope there is to say, well, listen, we just talked about guns, right? Yeah. You don't want to shoot fetuses, do you? No. No. Well, good, because Jeebus don't approve of that sort of thing. But we were talking about guns, and the whole reason we have guns is because that is a protected constitutional right under the Second Amendment, right? Oh, hell yeah, it's the most important amendment. I can't even tell you what the other nine are, or however the hell many they are. But I know about my Second Amendment rights. Well, okay then. The right of a woman to choose whether or not to carry a pregnancy to term, that's a constitutional right, too. So if you want to take away her constitutional right, you don't have much room to talk when somebody else wants to take away yours now, do you? Cletus, do you?
I never thought about it that way.
Okay, I'm not going to... Okay, hold on. Damn it. Stand by, please. I don't want to kill him, but I got to. Did I get you? Oh, no, he took off running. Son of a bitch.
Was that a spider, Bob?
Yeah, I went to squish him, and I think I got a couple of legs, but he limped away.
I try to capture them and throw them outside because I like the fact that they eat bugs.
Well, so do I, and this was a bug eater. Yep. This wasn't some black widow or brown recluse or... Yeah, Australian fennel web spider. No, came in under the door and, you know, dadgummit. you could have just stood there and let me send you off to reincarnation. You might have liked what you came back as next. Or you could have come back as a Republican. Damn it. Anyway. But those are the kind of conversations you have to have if you want to put Democrats in office in Confederate states. And the thing is, the folks like Brand New Congress and the precious little Tweed Justice Democrats and whatnot got no clue. They're going to march into Alabama and talk about how we got to, and talk about everything that drives those people crazy, because they are crazy. So, you know, that's part of the problem. Hey, listen, it's a minute past 8, and I want to send out thanks to Brother Deacon Asa. He just got us started for the first of the evening. He was testing out the PayPal interface over at headon.live, and so we got $460 to go in fundraising for to finish the week and finish the evening. And... this is exciting. We got 59 minutes to do it in. Cool, huh? No challenges on the table, nothing. Just, you know, but $460 to go. That's 46 folks at $10 a piece. Boy, wouldn't it be cool if 46 people signed up as subscribers on the 28th, which is effectively the last day of the month because everything gets fucked up every February with Skype. That would be awesome. Note coming from Robert in Australia. My $38.08 holiday challenge, thanks to Verizon. Frontier. I never did. Used to be Verizon. Robert in Australia says, I never did find out if my $38.08 holiday challenge was matched. It was. I have that episode on podcast, just waiting for a chance to listen to it. So was it ever matched? Yes. Then all caps, courtesy of Robert. Come on, people. Give money so Bob and Agnes, the Viking warrior princess, can have a holiday. If any two people on the planet deserve one, it's them. Yes, times are tough, but see if you can find something in your budget that you don't really need and make a donation to the Holiday Fund. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very kindly. And that's, you know, we're $460 away from matching our buddy Scott's offer and making the little ever so brief vacation that much closer to reality. Thank you, Robert. Note coming from Ron in Raleigh. Couple of things, Ron says. I haven't heard you mention a person from our childhood passed away this week, June Foray. The voice of Rocky the Flying Squirrel and Natasha Fatal went to her long home at the age of 99. Skynet became self-aware as of July 2017. Well, not really, but close the Facebook. The Facebook AI became self-aware and started using a self-invented language to communicate with other AIs. This gives me the heebie-jeebies. For good reason. Yeah, I did read about June Foray. That's the voice of Rocky the Flying Squirrel. Yeah. I hope she had a wonderful, wonderful life for all the happiness she brought to so many. And, yeah, Skynet. Well, okay, so let me add one into the mix. Did you see where, for the first time, scientists in the United States have manipulated the gene sequencing of a single-celled human ovum? Huh? Did you? Is that exciting? Is that terrifying? Right. Yeah. Okay, so we got that going. All right, I have Jim back on the stress line. Let's see if Jim can hear us this time. Hey, Jim.
Good evening.
How are you?
Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Bob, I can hear you. Not exactly 5x5. It is somewhat garbled. I can't even recognize the sound of your voice.
Well, that's, I'm okay, then it's not working for you. The stress line works for some, but not for others.
Oh, okay.
And I hear echoing coming in from your background, too, so no wonder.
There's no echoing here.
I don't know. We'll try to talk, next week, okay?
Oh, very well.
All right, thanks, Jim. I'm sorry. Like I said, this line works for some, and it doesn't work for others, and there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Understood.
All right, thanks.
Out.
But later. Bye now. I hate it when that happens, but it happens. So if you want to see if the stress line will work for you, you can try. I'm sorry it didn't work for Jim. He would have been a good addition to this conversation this evening. But 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN will get you into the studio. And let's go back into the Skype group. John, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Are you still there, man? Now what, I've lost the Skype line too? Steve?
No, I'm still here, Bob.
Okay, so maybe John was muted or something. Ah, and there's Steve.
I'm still here.
Yeah, we haven't, apart from our figuring out how to mute conversation, we haven't really heard from you. Chime in, Steve.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of the... I actually think that all of this that we saw here was completely planned. As much as I hate Mitch McConnell... And I've heard a number of people, because I used to live in D.C. I lived in D.C. for 10 years, so I still know a few people down there. He's one of the most despicable and disgusting people on the Hill.
Oh, Republicans don't even like him.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, he is he's like, you know, he was Ted Cruz before Ted Cruz was Ted Cruz. But the guy's, I think the guy's pretty smart. And I don't think they ever intended on passing any law. And the reason I say that is because I remember they made all that hullabaloo about passing a constitutional amendment to ban the marrying of the queers, and they had the whole thing and never really did anything. And I think they want the issue more than they want anything else, because they want to raise money off of it. And if they got rid of Obamacare, it would do two things to hurt them. First of all, the people who put them in office would suddenly not have health care, and they wouldn't have Medicaid expansion, and those people probably at some point would have said, well, wait a second. I think they would get wise to the fact that they now can't go to a doctor. And then they also don't have the issue. And the same thing with marriage equality, the same thing with the abortion stuff. I think that the GOP, at least the GOP as it's currently constituted, cares about one thing. They care about being in office. They care about making money off of being in office, and they care about making money off of running for office. They don't care about governing. They don't care about any of that stuff. They're all about making money. In that regard, from what we've talked about in the past, I think they're the complete opposite of the Democrats.
Oh, I know. And
Democrats care.
Yeah, I think you're right, Steve. And like last night watching Mike Enzi from Wyoming, I just kept asking myself, what is it that the people of Wyoming think they're sending to the Senate when they send Mike Enzi?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He was a patronizing, pusillanimous, holier-than-thou, self-referential, martyr-complexed, old-school marm. And I'm not dragging gender into this. I will have my hour, I will talk for my hour, or we will have an hour of silence. Jesus Christ. Will the senator yield for their question? No, I will not. I did not particularly care for the tone of your part of your discussion, so I'm going to speak now, and I will not yield. And the thing is, while he was talking, he was telling a whole great big raft of lies.
No, I will not yield. God, what a cock. I texted you when he was up. I said, Bob, who WTF is this guy, man?
No, the word you said is, who is this peckerhead?
that's what it was.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. What a great word, too. Guy, we need to resurrect that word on a more consistent basis.
Exactly.
Peckerhead.
And that immediately reminded me of a great, great moment, me and my movie references. Most of us have seen Mate One by now. James Earl Jones plays in it. And, you know, it's just awesome when you've got a character in a movie about a mine war who's actually the voice of Darth Vader. And at some point in time, and he plays a black coal miner who's brought in to be a strikebreaker, and one of the hillbillies says something to him and uses that word, at which point James Earl Jones immediately whips around and looks at him and says, "Watch your mouth, Peckerwood." And you know those two variations, Peckerhead and Peckerwood, those really do need to come back into currency, because I got a feeling there's a lot of room for usage there, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say something else. I don't even remember.
I did it again.
No, it's not you. It's just, I don't know what the hell it was.
Let me maybe this will tickle. I don't disagree with your theory as you put it forward, but the problem with it is that you can, if you're correct, you can put everything that's happened since January 20th into that hat. Because, like we were told, the trans ban was to get our minds off of the Boy Scouts, which was to get our minds off of Jared, which was to get our minds off of Uday. And now it games further out, and, Scaramucci, the mooch, was to get our minds off of, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I don't agree with that. I think the Boy Scout thing, and I think the transgender thing were red meat for the base. And I think, I've seen a number of interviews with people who even her supporters who are very open about saying, yeah, they don't like the tweeting and they don't like this about him. And I think that at every single point where he thinks or they or whoever thinks that they might be wavering a little bit, he has to throw a little red meat to them just to rile them up again, which is why he goes on these rallies periodically.
Yeah, he's coming back to West Virginia this Friday, next Friday.
Yeah. I think so that's what I think. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about. You mentioned about them not impeaching him. I think right now I would say the way he is right now, I can almost promise you that they're talking about impeachment in the Republican caucus, and here's why. When Trump was, and I'm using air quotes around the word elected, they saw him as, oh my God, here's our rubber stamp. We can put a coloring book with pictures of, you know, whatever in there, and he's going to sign it. And when they've realized that he can't even get people to vote, he can't even get one or two people to sway. So they're looking at him and going, this guy isn't useful. He isn't a true believer. I mean, Trump epitomizes what an opportunist is. He will, you know, he will be for or against something if it'll get him somewhere. Pence, on the other hand, is a true believer. And the base knows he's a true believer. And he doesn't have a tweeting problem. And he doesn't have a, you know, all of the baggage that Trump has to them. And I would not be surprised if all of a sudden you start seeing trial balloons floating in the Republican caucus in the House and the Senate. I mean, think about some of the language coming out of Lindsey Graham and all these people about, and I know Lindsey's a, you know, he falls on the fainting couch every time something gets his R up. But I've seen an awful lot of people saying that if he fires Jeff Sessions or if he files Mueller or if they don't pass this, then it's the end of his presidency. And I think, listen, you've been around Washington enough to know that there are very few accidents in Washington, either from what people say or what they do. And I think that... Yeah, you know that right now these people are going, you know what? He's not the stupid rubber stamp we thought he was going to be, because he can't sway one or two people like we need to sway them. And I think at some point, and not too much longer, we're going to start hearing those fire balloons coming out of the GOP caucus. Because the fact is, they're looking at 2018 and they're saying, what are we going to do when we go back to our constituents and say, yeah, we had it all, and we couldn't even do the one thing that we hemmed and hawed about for the entire campaign and for 7 years. And the way that they demonstrate, you know, a so-called change, even though they're doing the same thing, is to say, you know, we're going to get rid of Trump. We're going to put Pence in there and make sure that we have a true believer.
Okay, can I differ with you?
Of course. Okay. Well, Bob, wait a minute. I don't know. I thought I was. Of course, I'm the sycophant. So,
right.
I guess, if you say something, I have to disagree with it anyway.
No. After I disagree with you, since you're a sycophant, you have to give up your position and agree with me.
Okay.
Yeah, I want us to be clear about that, Steve.
Okay. I'll make sure. So once I hear it, then I'll be like, okay, yeah, you're right.
Right, that's your job. And by the way, some of the grim fog is beginning to dissipate. Jack, with the simple message, holiday, took us down to $410 to go. And then Christopher from Oregon,
took us down to 385 to go. So, let's see, 43 minutes, $385 to go. Maybe we can take a big bite out of that. It'd be nice. So, you know, the caucus isn't really what the relevant inquiry is, Steve. The relevant inquiry is because it has to, the impeachment process has to begin in the Judiciary Committee. And the Judiciary Committee would vote to form a committee of special inquiry, if I understand the procedure, and I think I do. Well, let's take a look at the House Judiciary Committee, and you tell me, okay, there are 18 Democrats. Let's assume that Ranking Member John Conyers and the 17 Democrats all are a unified front in favor of forming a committee of special inquiry. So that means that in order to defeat that, it would take 19 votes. Here is the membership of the full Republican contingent of the House Judiciary Committee. The chairman is Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, not known for his common sense approach to collaborative government. Then comes Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin. Who was one of the wild-eyed pricks from back in the days of the hunting of the cleanest.
Well, yeah, he was all about the turning the microphones off and all that stuff. Okay.
Yeah. Then you get Lamar Smith from Texas, who, if I'm not mistaken, was the guy who once upon a time said that CO2 can't be bad for planet Earth, or else they wouldn't put it in soda pop. I don't know anything about Steve Chabot of the 1st Ohio District. I know a little bit about Daryl Issa from California's 49th. But look, I know a lot about Steve Cantaloupes King from Iowa. And a good little bit about Trent Franks from Arizona, teabagger and trumpansee extraordinaire. And then, well, then, there's Louis Asparagus Gohmert. And really, what is there left to say about the congressman from the 1st District of Texas that hasn't already been said? You know, batshit crazy, religious maniac, moran. Jim Jordan from Ohio, who is a vicious prick. Ted Poe from Texas, ditto. Now, this list still has Jason Chaffetz on it, but he's gone now. I don't know anything about Tom Marino. I do know something about Trey Gowdy, who ran as far as he could go to get away from ever after spending years hollering, Benghazi! Ran as far as he could run to get away from ever having to investigate Donald Trump. Then there's Raul Labrador from Idaho, who is nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake, and everybody's favorite congressman in, pink fleece ducky footy pajamas, Blake Farenthold of Texas. Doug Collins of Georgia is no representative sample of sanity. Ron DeSantis of Florida, I'm doubting is either. And then there's Ken Buck, John Ratcliffe, and then there's Martha Roby from Alabama. Woohoo! Oh, she's a live one. And Matt Gaetz from Florida, and Mike Johnson from Louisiana, and Andy Biggs from Arizona. Now, what I'm gonna suggest here is that committees are carefully drawn up. And that is, as far as Donald J. Trump is concerned, a very, very safe committee. Because in order to get the Committee of Special Inquiry created, you'd have to have a majority. You got to have a majority. That means that those 18 Democrats, you would have to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Republicans defect. Is it okay, Steve, if I say ain't gonna happen?
Well, let me qualify what I or amend. You know what? If it came down to Paul Ryan or somebody saying, look, you're not going to win re-election, he can't do anything. If you want, I still think that I hear what you're saying. And I don't disagree with that. And I apologize about the noise.
No, it's okay. It got really quiet now.
But I think that, I still think that, listen, all politicians care, all of them, I don't care how trimpanzee-ish they are, they want to get reelected. Listen, they have nothing to go back to their constituents about. And for whatever you think about the trimpanzees and the sheep dip brained people of a lot of those places, I think a number of people are going to be asking, well, wait a second. You were supposed to do this. You have the whole thing. You have it all.
Yeah, but consider, Steve, there's not a single Republican on there from New Jersey or New York. One from California. There's one from Pennsylvania. There's a couple from Ohio. But apart from that, it's all Georgia, Florida. There's one from Colorado. Texas is overrepresented. One from Wisconsin. They're all from Trumpansy districts, okay? They can go back and say that, and they will not be punished, okay? There is not a single member who is on that side of the committee who faces any threat whatsoever come November.
But you know what I think they could do? They could vote present and not vote either way. And if they're not, going to have any consequences, then like you said, no matter what they do, they're going to get reelected. I just think behind closed doors, even you know, look as dumb as those people are to the public, they're probably not that stupid in private. Although, the guy that I worked for was dumber than a sack of doorknobs, even in private. Probably dumber in private than he was in public. I think that the leadership, the real powers that be are looking at this, and they see themselves in the minority on the horizon because they have everything. I see what you're saying, and I'm wondering if I'm just being contrarian for the sake of being contrarian, but
I think you desperately want this country to have some relief, is what I think, and I share that desperate sense, Steve. But there's no there. Every one of these districts is a district where the only thing they could do that would put them in peril would be to do something disloyal to Donald Trump.
How about Plan B and take back the House next year?
Well, that's great, but that's still a question of identifying places where you can beat someone. There's not a threatened Republican on that list in the Judiciary Committee. Taking back the House, even though it's a relatively small number of seats, is a harder task than it appears.
So even if you took back the House, you couldn't rearrange the Judiciary Committee, is what you're saying.
Well, sure you could if you took back the House.
Sure you could, yeah. If you had the majority, right. it essentially would be reversed in terms of numbers. Right.
But you still...
I guess what I'm really saying is that where it may have been completely unlikely, it's at least more likely now than it would have been.
Well,
I mean,
that's
all I'm saying. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, it's like you said, privately they're saying that he's nuts. And I think there's reason to think that that is true.
Right.
But they can say it until hell freezes over. Until they act on it, it's another matter. Let me bring another story into the mix. With a mention that here with 32 minutes left in the program, we have $385 in fundraising to go. Sorry about that. That's a pain in the ass for me to keep mentioning, but you know, damn it, it is what it is.
Right. And let me just say, Bob, I really apologize. Right now...
You have... No. If this is a fundraising apology, don't make it. There's nothing for you to apologize for. I'm not pitching.
Okay.
No,
I understand.
This isn't a guilt trip.
I understand. It's just the horn means a lot to me, and when I can't pitch in, it pisses me off a little bit, and I feel need to say something.
I know, and I mean, I get those kind of messages, and I appreciate them. I sincerely do, but there's no need to apologize. This is not a teeny tiny. I mean, okay, it's not billions of people a week or anything, but this is a community. That has managed to keep this going for years and years and years. It's just, you know, sometimes people wait to see what other people are going to do and that kind of thing. And you know, maybe that's, and it's the end of the month and people are beat, and I understand that.
And you still got Monday.
You still got, well, 2 hours of Monday. Fundraising has proven to be slow on those
Very
days.
Very difficult, yeah. And I got beat up. I had to replace the well. The community well, I had to get 2 pressurized tanks, but I'm not crying or anything. Whatever you need, Bob, I'll send you whatever you need on margin. I mean,
yeah, no. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about it. Don't even say that. We'll get there. You know, 385
okay.
to go, and we'll just see what happens. I've got another story here that, and time is fairly short.
And let me say something real quick, Bob. Next time you're in D.C., let me know, because I might be able to finagle some neat shit for you to go see, because I still know some people there.
Ooh.
I had a friend of mine in the Secret Service. I got to go into the West Wing a few times.
Ooh.
I don't know if you want to see the West Wing at this point, because it's so polluted. And the other thing, too, anybody, not just Bob, but anybody who's up here in New York, you know, look me up, and I know some really good... craft. I know some really good bars with some really good craft beer and food.
Hey.
Or as it's described hereabouts, them homebrews.
Yes. And one of the bars that I go to, and I think I sent you a link to it, Bob, they smoke their own beef and pork.
Mm-mm.
So they have a smoked corned beef on rye sandwich.
Yum!
Oh man, talk about cultural fusion.
Yeah.
With brown spicy mustard, come on, man, you're killing me.
Well, they have an IPA mustard or an IPA sauerkraut.
Oh,
I've had there's a commercial brand of that you can buy in the grocery store. It comes out of Wisconsin. It's a beer sauerkraut, and oh my God, it's good.
Yeah. And they make everything. This is one of those. It's kind of a rare bar. They make everything themselves. So they make their own salsa there. It's funny, man. You know, for all these people who are always saying shit about immigrants. We have a couple really good guys there who are from Mexico who make some unbelievably good salsa there.
Okay, we've moved into food porn now.
Okay, but back to the less important stuff. It has to deal with the future of our country.
So Asa provided me this story yesterday, and I really felt like it needs to be gotten out there because it might be a little bit underreported. Many of us may not know that this past week there was a security conference in Australia. and the United States attended, and attended in one particular form, with the commander of the United States Pacific Fleet. And an academic, according to NPR, an academic in the audience posed this question to Admiral Scott Swift. At risk of being blunt, if, when you return to your command next week, you were to receive an order from the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States, to make a nuclear attack on China, would you do it? Admiral Scott Swift answered, the answer would be yes. Every member of the U.S. military has sworn an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and to obey the officers and President of the United States as the Commander-in-Chief appointed over us. This is core to American democracy, and any time you have a military that is moving away from a focus and an allegiance to civilian control, then we really have significant problems. Anybody, okay, first question. Anybody got cold?
I have a problem with that.
Well, does anybody have cold chills from that?
Yeah.
First of all, thanks so much to NPR, or to the, I'm sorry, to the academic. Thanks so much to the academic for asking that question, you know, in Australia, just not that far south of China. Because I'm sure that played real well up in Beijing.
If you don't have cold chills, you better check your pulse, damn it.
Yeah, no shit.
But the thing is, what I find more disturbing out of this story is the answer of the admiral. Okay, he's in uniform under what I think Article 88 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. He is forbidden. He has, by virtue of putting on the uniform and accepting the commission, he gave up a big chunk of his First Amendment rights, okay? So, he can't criticize and he can't say ugly things about the president and still be an admiral. He'd go back to just being Scott Swift, guy with a lawnmower. Not Scott Swift, guy with a nuclear arsenal. Big difference. As it is, he lives in a mansion. He's got servants all over his house. He's got a driver. He doesn't have to tie his own fucking shoelaces, okay? He's an admiral. But there's still a problem with his answer. And that is, it, at least since the end of the Second World War, it has been made clear in our military law that it,
lawful orders,
that no one has to obey an unlawful order.
And I was obeying orders is not a defense to war crimes or crimes against humanity or the crime of aggression.
And in precisely, then you're going exactly where I went. And moreover, this ties into something else, something that you said, Steve. It is one thing, because, for instance, there was that story a couple of days ago that Susan Collins, in a conversation with Jack Reed of Rhode Island, was caught by a hot mic describing Donald Trump saying, he's crazy.
I don't think she did that unintentionally. I think she absolutely knew what she was doing, by the way.
Good.
She also body shamed the congressman that wanted to challenge her to a duel.
Okay, but so there's a reason I mention that.
But good on her for that too.
I don't think either you, Steve, or Billable Rick will push back from a legal standpoint on this. The President of the United States is entitled to a presumption of sanity. And so it would be awfully hard for this admiral to say, no, I won't launch a nuke, as long as the president continues to be presumed sane. You with me?
Yes.
So that means that the only way to create, the only way to rebut that presumption of sanity is for members of the Congress
even if it's the Democratic minority, for members of Congress, the House and Senate together, to begin standing up and saying openly and plainly and not giving a damn about their reelection. Because at this point in time, we're talking about existential stuff related to the ongoing survival of the country. The man in the White House is nuts. Because while you can't be impeached for being nuts, rebutting the presumption of sanity at least provides the ability for a member of the military ordered to do something nuts by someone who's nuts to say, no, he's nuts, and therefore I deem that an illegal order.
And you know what? Something else that also strikes me where the admiral is wrong. Without a state of war existing, which means a declaration from the Congress, he has no right to in fact, I would submit under that circumstance, he has an obligation, regardless of the lawfulness of the order or the sanity of the president, to say no, we are not in a state of war. There is no imminent threat from a country 10,000 miles from our shores.
Right. And so...
You know what? That makes what the guy said even more chilling.
Yeah, it is, because whatever happened to the idea of having done it once, we will never again use nuclear weapons in a first strike capacity. Are we not signed off on that notion somewhere by way of a treaty or a general agreement?
Well, you know, North Korea just fired off another ICBM today.
Yep. And frankly, I couldn't care less. I mean, I'm not pushing back against you, Steve, but they're going to keep doing that because they're trying to poke the crazy man with a sharp stick.
Yeah, it's poking the stick in the hornet's nest. Can I just, right along the lines of what Steve just said, I have a very good friend. Actually, he's my boss in one of the companies I'm associated with. He's from Korea. And I've talked to him and a number of Koreans about this stuff with North Korea. You know what they do? They laugh. They're right there. You know, Seoul is, what, 40 miles from the DMZ? They laugh at this shit, and they look at this shit and go, this ain't anything we haven't seen before. It's just, and at this point, it's just an adolescent, you know, nothing but a repressed, or not repressed, but whatever the word is, essentially an adolescent acting out. So this shit about us needing to be afraid, they're not afraid in South Korea. This isn't anything they haven't seen before. It's not even something they even think about.
No, but for me, that story is not about nuking China or it's North Korea or anybody else. It's about the necessity of rebutting the presumption of presidential sanity. Because otherwise, the thing is, the reason the North Koreans are poking him is because they know they will get a response. And nothing would tickle them more than to have him attack them. Okay, the mouse that roared, remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, a quick update. We have gone from 385 down to 310. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Charlene, so very, very much. And so we draw nearer to finishing to the good. Thank you, Charlene. And let me at this point in time bring on. I think we've got Good Todd. Is that you, Todd?
This would be Good Todd.
Hey, Good Todd, what's happening, my friend?
All right, I'm enjoying this parliamentary conversation with the Congress, and then I actually heard what you were talking about earlier this week. on NPR with the Admiral, and he was shrewd. I got the same impression. He was shrewd. He was like, okay, I'm going to set the table. So I hope who's listening, who has the power, can hear me. And you people need to start doing something, because we are halfway bound in the military. There's only so much we can do.
Yeah, and I mean, what he said is true. You do not want the military having control of the military. You want civilian control of the military.
You do. You do. And but you see, they are not bound to do something that they think is illegal, and they'll let the judiciary, the military courts figure it out. But so nobody wants to go down that road, is what I'm trying to say. But yes, that I just like the way he did it, and it was amazing, because at that point, that admiral, that person seems so much more intelligent than the current president.
There's something more to add into the mix, Todd, and that's this. And I think I touched on this earlier. When Marcus Aurelius put out that first tweet that said, based upon consultation with my generals and military experts, I have determined that, or whatever the tweet was, ... Do you realize that Everybody in the Pentagon brass, who never had it before, now has Twitter. You know, the head of NATO has Twitter. The various and sundry generals in our European and Asian installations have Twitter, and they've got Twitter because they follow one fucking person, and that is, Tiny. And so when he put out that first tweet with the ... a whole bunch of the brass thought that he was getting ready to declare war on North Korea.
Yep.
Instead of banning, yep. trying to ban trans people from the military. There was a huge sigh of relief. It's like, whew, okay, we can deal with this. He can't really ban people, trans people from the military. So, whew, that was close.
Did you see Andrea Mitchell? Andrea Mitchell was having three babies. She was like, oh, my God, thank God we're not going to war. I remember that. It took her like 2 hours for the dust to settle.
Rest assured, that was by design, too, the ...
Sure, because he's from reality TV and wrestling.
Exactly.
Got to stay tuned in. You don't know what the crazy little bastard... You know, there's a wonderful line, and I think it still exists on my Facebook page. One of my favorite lines from one of my favorite movies, The In-Laws, Peter Falk, Alan Arkin. And at one point in time, the light goes on for Nancy Dussault, who plays Alan Arkin's not even long-suffering. I mean, she's just, a lovely wife, and, she's a dentist's wife, and they live in New Jersey, and they got a nice house and a nice car. And she, all of a sudden, the light goes on, and she realizes what's unfolding before her very eyes, and she looks at her daughter and says, that crazy little bastard has involved your poor father in something. And it's funny, but that's where we are. That crazy little bastard has involved our poor country in something, and I fear we're going to wind up with something more than flames on a BMW.
I want to ask a question.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
This is on topic and off topic. Now, it's going to take something extraordinary to get this guy out of office, unless someone can prove that he's unable to discharge his duties, as a fine talker has already stated. Okay. So, beyond that, or to add to that, something spectacular has to happen. Now, I want to know, who is the comptroller? Who cuts the checks for the White House? Because we know this guy fashions himself as a mobster, a gangster, Russian, Italian, doesn't matter, whatever. Any kind of ethnicity you want to pick. And part of that is you got these no-show jobs. You know, you hire fake people to do fake work, and you write it off. I mean, you just pocket the money. Now we already know the State Department is a skeleton staff. You got the government is not being staffed properly. So where's all this money going that used to go out in salaries? Oh,
yeah.
Lost me?
No, I haven't lost it at all. I hadn't thought about that.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money that's going nowhere right now. I haven't heard anybody talk about that at all. Because he's into that money laundering. Everybody's known that. I mean, everybody knows he's a crook. That's why he didn't win his own peer group in New York. I mean, everybody knows he's always been a weirdo, dirty crook. But whatever. Middle America, they love him. But I don't want to get off of one of my tangents. But, yeah, I would like to hear someone address that issue.
I really got nothing, Todd, and not because I don't find the issue interesting, but I haven't pondered it. And, I mean, you know, the executive has a budget. And there are and it's budgeted for X number of employees at X rate. And if you don't spend it, you don't get to keep it. At least that's not the way government usually works.
Nope. And who has been missing? Mr. Brexit exit, I'm going to tax Tillerson, right? Now, and he stood to make a hell of a lot of money if things went right with Russia because of his stock options from, what was it, ExxonMobil he was with? They were trying to make a big deal in Russia, so he stood to make a $3 billion deal, something like that.
Follow the money.
But you see, the State Department is the ghost town. I mean, even the damn conservatives don't even like it. This can't go on. My point is that this can't go on. But it's gonna be so disgusting. It's gonna be so crazy.
An avenue. Let me just catch what you're saying. An avenue, which they can make it go on. And this is one of Trump's crazy tweets today. He's wanting Mitch, and Mitch will do his bidding, to change the rules to 50 votes instead of 60 for procedural. And if they do that, then shit, everything's out the window, man. If you're in the minority. They could do it. I mean, they did it with the Supreme Court nomination. I mean, all it would take was the nuclear option, and they would point the shitty stick right back at us because we did it when we were trying to get through judicial nominations that they were stalling us forever and ever and ever during the Barack administration. So it's frightening.
What do you think is going to happen, Steve?
I don't know. I don't know. I'd like to defer to Bob because he's a lot more wiser than I am.
Can I say something about?
I hear him thinking.
You're essentially, if I can understand, wondering what's going to happen to the filibuster.
Right, they're going to do away, and Trump suggested this in one of his crazy tweets today, that they make everything just 51 votes, 51 take all. Do away.
I have to tell you, I think that's the way it should be. Why should it? Listen, elections are supposed to have consequences.
I understand that, but it protects the tyranny of the majority against the minority. That's why we
Steve,
have this.
Steve, I mean, not to interrupt, but we're running short of time. I understand both sides of that argument, but remember, I mean, there's a list of things we could have had especially in the years when we had both houses of Congress, the first couple of years of the Obama administration, 9 and 10, there's a list of stuff we could have had Mitch McConnell not threatened a filibuster more often than in the entire combined history of the Senate in the years prior to his accession as minority leader. Okay?
Well, that's all well and good. We're going to flush our asses down the toilet now on hindsight.
Well, I mean, but if you're going to worry about the fairness and the tyranny of the majority, we were subjected to the tyranny of the minority for those couple of years. But if you're going to worry about the essential fairness of the Senate, then ask yourself, why is it that Mike Enzi has the same amount of power representing 300,000 people and 4 million cattle as Kamala Harris, who, let's remember, is nowhere near anything approaching ideological purity. She's a horrible person, but still, she represents millions and millions and millions of human beings. Mike Enzi represents thousands.
Well, let's think about this over the weekend. Do we really want to do with the 60-vote procedural thing to move forward?
Well, what dumbass Trump was complaining about is not the filibuster generally. He was complaining about the budget reconciliation rules. And the budget reconciliation rules say you've got to have 60 votes. That's not a filibuster thing. It means that if you're really, really going to, if you're going to fuck with what's important in this country, i.e. the money, you're going to have to get some, cooperation from the other side of the aisle. Okay? That's what Trump didn't like. Trump wants bare-knuckled, pure exercise of power.
Because he knows he has the numbers now, and he's that short-sighted. Well, this could change.
Yeah, it could, and it already has. The filibuster for judges is already gone.
Out the window.
So, you know, if you really want to focus your energies on anything, if you're a praying person, then pray like crazy for the long, long lives of every one of the so-called liberal members of the Supreme Court.
You know, the compromise to this, if you're going to allow the filibuster, then goddamn it, you got to walk in there and you got to talk. You can't just say, okay, filibuster, we're filibustering and demand a cloture vote. If you want a filibuster, then you change the rule to say you got to come in here and talk.
Yeah. Read the phone book, the Jimmy Stewart thing. Read the phone book.
Well, I mean, and look, we got a really tiny example of that last night with Mike Enzi. And like I said, he was one more when Mitch McConnell finally sent him the note to sit down and shut the fuck up. He was down to talking about his days as a little schoolgirl on the prairie. And he along the way talked about his diabetes, and I was thinking, man, somebody send chocolate. I think I sent out one tweet that said #SendButters, #SendBacon, but it turned out no, he needed send sugar. That's what it's like. And what he proved last night, Steve, is that it is damnably difficult to accomplish. By the way, in answer to the question, where's the money going? Mark in Florida says, money is going towards Jared and Ivanka's defense lawyer, Don Trump's lawyer, Flynn's lawyer, Manafort's lawyer, not cheap, facing Mueller's 15 prosecutors. And, you know, even that's going to be subject to inquiry, which, of course, is why you don't want to look into anybody else's family money things, like Trump said, because you never hell, maybe they're ripping the place off already. But we're almost out the door, and I have to happily say that thanks to David, one of the Davids, we are down to 300, and Fab just took us down to 200.
So this is a reachable goal. Thank you. Thank you, David. And thank you, Fab. Thank you very, very much. $200 to go in 3 minutes. It's a little tall.
It's almost
bit of,
a Festivus miracle.
It's another one of those human. It's approaching a human miracle provided by the Horn Family Community Congregation. Now, one last thing in the last couple of minutes. Todd, I got to tell you. Today, I picked up my rib and roast rack.
Oh, no. I saw that. It loads. You got it? The chrome one?
Yep. No. Mine's porcelain coated.
Hey, can I say something real quick, Bob? You know what? I got to give all of the... I have to give a big thanks to VWP for those, for that big... I don't know what that thing's called, that thing with the photos on Facebook.
It's called an acorn.
I could just taste it. I could, when I was looking at that big slab of meat, I could just, orgasm right there. Foodgasm, excuse me. Foodgasm right there.
Well, the plan for the weekend is to try the first experiment with ribs.
Oh man.
Everybody's smiling now. That's good.
Yeah,
and I'm not even kidding you. My mouth is literally watering.
So, I got hickory and pecan, Todd.
Oh man,
God!
And
please put plenty of pictures on Facebook.
Will be Facebook pictures. Yes. Oh. I even emailed a photograph to Todd because I don't know if Todd's on Facebook or not.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah, it's brown. It looks good.
That just sounds so good. Oh my God, that sounds fantastic.
And with
you got everybody hungry now.
And with the tangy, oh my God, spicy yellow slaw, and not even any barbecue sauce. If it's done right, you don't need to slop it up with sauce.
So you're off the yogurt trail now, Bob.
I had my yogurt this morning, but okay.
You can mix it in.
I'm slowly and carefully, you know. Just a little. Mostly it was for Ferg and Agnes and my daughters and the grandbabies. You know, they all got some, I think.
Understood. Just as long as you can enjoy just a taste of it, though.
Yeah, and a Boston butt is a lot bigger raw than it winds up smoked. I mean, Todd can tell you that. All right.
Yeah.
As we run to the end of the program, which is where we are at right now, Billable Rick said, my mic's not working, but I'll throw in $20 and another $20 if it's met in the next 30 minutes. And that just landed. So between now and 9:30, if there's $20 come in, it'll get turned. Your $20 will be turned into 20 more, and that'll take us down to 140 to go. So thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you very kindly. One last note coming from James. Hypothetical order: North Korea knows that Saddam didn't have missiles or nukes, and they got toppled. There you go. That's where we find ourselves at the end of the evening.
Hey, Bob, may your acorn grow into a wonderful smoker barbecue tree.
It is, Todd. It is seasoning out very, very nicely. Thank you kindly. So that's where we close things. Thanks everybody for a wonderful Friday on the front porch. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you, Steve in New York. Thank you, Steve from Georgia, Stan. Thank you, Charlie, for chiming in. Thank you, John. We'll do it again next week, I hope. And remember, all the programs next week, or not all the programs, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, the programs are only 2 hours long, and then there's 2 hours of Malloy at 9 p.m. So I hope you'll join in for all of that. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly for your yeoman work this week. Midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around good guy, Steve from Georgia, Stan. Thank you, News Ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, one and all. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And remember, over at smile.amazon.com, use smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch as the recipient of a portion of your purchase proceeds in support of a mighty worthy grassroots nonprofit busting their ass on next to nothing to struggle for Appalachian human rights, human health, and human dignity. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all, and have a great weekend.